to keep doing something else. I was like, let's count again. Okay. Good evening. My name is Teresa. I'm an alcoholic. Grateful to be here. Grateful to be sober because of a loving God. Ah. There's a lot of people in here. Okay. And it was enough to try to take in how many people I see, and then you just had to talk about other rooms and... You know what I mean? This is really nerve-wracking. I always like to get this out of the way first before I even thank anybody, because this is what stands in the way of my usefulness to you. And it's my uncomfortability. I never thought that my experience can benefit others. I don't ever remember saying, sitting out there, I can't wait to get up to this podium and talk to all these people. So it's just really uncomfortable. I find it to be extremely intimidating, and I'm very vulnerable. And even though people tend to give me advice, and I say it's their opinion, but they tend to tell me, it's not a big deal, it's just a bunch of drunks, and I'm like the most judgmental, critical people. That doesn't make it any better, trust me. We're the worst crowd, you know what I'm saying? I want to thank Connie, my host, Ann, the committee, for asking me to come out. I always say for doing a 12-step call on me, helping me to stay sober another day. I always think it's funny when they call you a couple of years beforehand. Right, that was a couple of years ago Connie called me. Somebody called me just the other day for the 2015. And it's always funny when they do call me, I don't make them feel any better of their choice because I tend to go, you AA people can mess up a girl's drinking. You mean to tell me I got to stay sober to 2015? I thought it was a one day at a time thing, man. Well, there goes my glass of wine tomorrow. Hoping, right? I gotta speak and I have too much pride to drink, right? So I gotta stay sober to 2015. That's what I'm saying. I don't want nobody to say, did you hear our speaker? She went out. You know what I mean? So I'm gonna keep coming back. So that's why I say thank you for doing a 12-step call on me. God has a sense of humor. He really, really does. He tends to find the things that I'm most uncomfortable with to do. And I do believe that for whatever reason, God knows that if I don't keep sharing it, I'll forget it. If I don't give it away, I won't be able to keep it. I'm a real sick alcoholic. If you leave me on the couch too long, I'm one of those that be like, we're all gonna die. What's the point anyway? You know, it's real scary. I got to do a lot of service work. Oh, my goodness. There's a flood of people. Okay. I always be like, all right, God, anytime now. I'm just stalling here. This is your gig. Anytime you got me standing here, I'm looking pretty foolish. You know what I'm saying? How much more time you need to kick in? Anyway. Goodness, what an honor. Gopher State, this is my first time here, so thank you so much. I've heard lots and lots of great things about it. There was a couple of years back that my mother had the opportunity to coming and spending the weekend with you guys. I was out speaking somewhere else. It's great to be back in Minnesota. It's been bittersweet for me the last few days. I was here just last weekend, actually. I've lived here on and off for the last 5 years. My brother lived here. He went to seminary school. And he just passed away. And I'm just so grateful for the love that I've received in Minnesota and the support of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got to give my props to Bob Bazance. Thank you, Bob B., for coming. It was so cute. My sponsees, I was on the phone with them and my girlfriend, and I was just a basket case. And they were so adorable. One of my sponsees called Bob and was like, "Hi, my name is so-and-so. I'm an alcoholic. It doesn't matter. My sponsor is in Minnesota. You need to go help her." It was so cool, and he came. Because they wanted to give me, like, sedatives and stuff, right? They needed a tranquilizer. I was a mess. They were like, "You need drugs." And pretty much, I was like, I'm not in a position to make that decision. I mean, I'm down, but I don't think it's a good idea. And since I'm not emotionally well at this point, I think we better check with others. So I actually called an emergency AA meeting. And thank God for sanity that there's still an ounce of it. And I'm like, let somebody else who is spiritually fit decide what I need for right now. And you know what? Bob was the best sedative. Because, you know, he's cool. What, you got like 50-something? You saw how long he was standing? It's nice to get a real old-timer to pick you up when you're emotionally a basket case. They're real cool. You never. I love the old-timers. They don't like, nothing phases them. Do you know what I'm saying? So Bob was just like, "What's happening?" I'm like, "I don't know, I'm not doing well." He's just like, "Get in the car." You know what I mean? That was so cool. I thought he was taking me like to the loony bin or something, because he didn't say nothing, and the whole time in the car he's just driving. I'm like, Where are we going? Anyway, thank you. That was so right on time. Right on time. I want to welcome anybody who's new. Welcome home. We've been praying for you. I love to share that because I heard that when I got here. I love to tell the newcomer that there is a moment of silence and prayer, and it takes place in every meeting all over the world. And that's for you. But for the grace of God, you have been lifted up and brought into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. That is not your idea. You don't get credit for this one. You've been given a gift, and it's a gift unearned. We ask you to keep coming back. Don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle happens. And let us love you until you can learn to love yourself. And my prayer is that alcohol is through with you. That you've been given the gift of desperation. And that when you think about your last drunk, you get so sick you just want to throw up. And it's going to be all right. Just hold on. And the good news is you don't have to do this alone. I ask you to listen in a general way and to listen to the similarities and not the differences. And as I share what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, you get to ask yourself some questions like, that happened to me. I felt that way too. And more importantly, perhaps this program can work for me. Sometimes before I share, depending on where I'm at, but this is a pretty big place, but I tend to do a disclaimer, and my disclaimer is a little different. I tend to go rated R, adult content, nudity, parental guidance suggested. And whenever I don't do that, there's always somebody afterwards who tells me I should have, because it was a bit much for them. And even though the newcomer is the most important person in the room, and that you are, and if you be new, it's important that you understand that not only am I here so that I could stay sober, the only way for me to do that is to be here for you. So I came here for California for you, because I'm responsible because somebody was here for me. But as we acknowledge all those who stood up, the old timers, always like to acknowledge the old timers. I want to thank you for my life and my sobriety. I still want what you have, and I never want to lose that. Never. I don't know where I would be if it wasn't for the old timers. We would be a mess. We're already a mess. I watch them. I still watch you. I watch you show up at the same meeting, sit in your favorite seat, your seat, that's your seat. Everybody knows that's your seat. Even if somebody sits in it by mistake, they're just not comfortable. They can't get comfortable. Something about that seat. I watch them that they still sweep the floors and they put up the chairs and they extend their hands and they set that example. And you let me know that I too can recover one day at a time. I love the old timers in my home group, and many of them have passed on to the big meeting in the sky. And it is my responsibility to carry the same message that they carried to me. If you be new, you'll notice the old timers, they're usually the most quiet person in the room. I always like to identify them like Confucius or the guy from the movie Kung Fu. It's kind of an old movie, but Kung Fu guy used to walk around, you know, his master teacher, and he'd be like, "Take the coin from my hand, grasshopper." You know that guy? They're the coolest people. I like to watch the old timers that have been hanging out with each other for a while in the rooms. A lot of them still don't like each other after 30 years. You never noticed that? It's so cool. I totally dig that. It'd be like 35 years, they've been hanging out with each other, and one's going to get ready to share, and the rest of them be like, ugh. I love that. I love that. And the other one don't care. He's like, whatever, you know. 30 years they've been doing that. I have so much respect for you. That's cool. It taught me that everybody's welcome. And that the only requirement is a desire to want to stop drinking. So if you knew, we say a lot around here, and I've learned a lot through watching. And I've watched a lot of those who've come before me. I've learned what to be like and what not to be like. You are all my teachers, and I want to thank you. So as I say, we share in the generation what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I tell you, that's why I keep saying God got a sense of humor. I am so sick of me. But for some reason, he's making sure that I don't forget it. You told me not to forget my last drunk. And when I talk about what it was like, I feel like I'm talking about a stranger. That I'm talking about myself in third person. You can't tell me there isn't a God and that this program does not work. My experience has proven otherwise. I am definitely a miracle, and I see a lot of miracles in the room, but I still trip out that I'm here, that I'm present, that I'm alive, only but for the grace of God. I'm an alcoholic because I like the effect produced by alcohol. And I'm restless, irritable, and discontent unless I find that ease and comfort that comes immediately with the first few drinks. And even though I admit that it's injurious, it really doesn't matter. But you see, my relationship with alcohol goes real deep. I like to classify my dynamic or the relationship or my drinking career as a love affair. Alcohol was administered to me, so I didn't have the privilege, as I've heard so many people share the story of not fitting in their life and one day discovering alcohol and alcohol making it all better. Until one day they crossed some invisible line and it got bad. I always go, as the story goes. There's not much of this changes. My mother didn't want another child. my father did. According to my mother, I am a product of rape. My father has an entirely different, you know, angle on that situation. My mother, too, is an alcoholic, and I don't say that because I label her an alcoholic. She's an admitted alcoholic in Alcoholics Anonymous. My mother drank, and she did a lot of drugs, and she did everything possible to abort me. Needless to say, I was meant to be here because I'm here. I was born a preemie, I was born sick, and I was born addicted. My mother told my father and my grandmother, in particular my father, she said, you wanted it, you can have it, take it, and keep it away from me. And my mother left, and she left me in the hospital. My father and my grandmother came to get me, and according to them, whenever I would cry, the only way to keep me quiet was to put alcohol in my bottle or in my gums. Now, my dad and my grandmother came up with an idea. They wanted my mother to touch me or to look at me or something. So they decided that if they left me alone with her, they took my older brother out the house and they left me alone with mommy. According to my mother, I began to cry. And she tried to muffle out the noise by putting the pillow over her ears, and she couldn't. So she went to the crib, and she tried to put the pillow over my face to shut me up. And then she remembered, if you give her alcohol, she'll stop crying. From that moment on, my mother made sure that I had alcohol in my system 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So now for years, I used to go around parroting what other people said in the rooms, like, I don't blame my alcoholism on my family. I don't say that anymore. Just my experience, my story. I don't ever remember making a conscious choice to drink. I love the diversity in the rooms. Somebody asked me that once. When did you make a conscious choice to drink? I don't remember. I don't think I ever did. How could I possibly? I drank 24 hours a day, all day long, 7 days a week. I wasn't really given any food. If there was food for us to get, my brother and I would go to neighbors, and my mother was drinking and partying. I'm an adult child of an alcoholic. I grew up in an alcoholic home. Now, does that make me alcoholic? No. That's what I started out by saying. I'm an alcoholic because I like the effect produced by alcohol. Maybe I could have grown up to be different. I don't know. But I just know that alcohol was given to me. It was very dysfunctional. And I learned that here. I didn't know that my family life was dysfunctional. That was my family. There was a lot of drugs. There was a lot of alcohol. I have uncles that are heroin addicts. They were always nodding out. I wasn't embarrassed about them. If you know any heroin addicts, they're telling a story and they nod out and they wake up and finish right where they left off. You know what I'm saying? It ain't all that bad. So I wasn't embarrassed. You know what I'm saying? My friends were like, what's up with your uncle? I'm like, he'll be fine. He'll be back in a minute. Just hold on. He'll finish. He's cool. There was a lot of drama going on, a lot of chaos. I come from a lot of abuse. Physical abuse. Get smacked, kicked, punched, spit on. Verbal abuse. I'm stupid. You're an idiot. You're ugly. You're nothing. You're nobody. Get out of my face. You don't deserve to be here. You need to die. You disgust me. That's the language I understood. Sexual abuse. I lost my virginity around 5. Men and women took turns. Now, it was family members, it was neighbors, it was people down the block. I don't know if I was sold. Maybe one day you say more and more will be revealed. That'll come. I don't know. I just know it was a lot of people. There were a lot of strangers in and out of the house. One minute I could wake up and somebody was there. But the whole time I'm drinking, and I sip my drinks. It was like drinking from a baby bottle. I didn't drink milk. Like, we sip on water today, or the way you drink milk, or you call it pop. That's been fun since I've been here. I keep thinking something's about to pop. You want pop? I'm like, something's popping? What's happening? Anyway. Like, no, something to drink. I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. I get it. It's poppy. It's bubbly. Okay. I grew up in the projects in New York City. So I know it's a little confusing, right? They say Teresa from California, then I sound like Rosie Perez. Y'all get all thrown off, right? And when I really start going, that New Yorker comes out. It gets scary. I'm trying to be, you know, mindful of the signer. I feel bad for them. They be like, what? And sometimes I'm glad the interpreter is further away, because when they're right next to me, I really confuse, you know, the hearing impaired. Because I'm a Latina, we talk a lot with our hands, so they don't know who to see. I be like, yeah, be throwing them off. So I'm glad he's all the way over there. So we talk about the insanity of alcoholism, incomprehensible demoralization. I tell people that that was my life. That was normal in my world. Whether somebody got shot, somebody OD'd. That was normal. And what alcohol did for me is, I always tell people, I don't know if alcohol talked to you, but alcohol talked to me. And what alcohol told me was, if nobody loves you, I love you. If nobody wants you, I want you. I got your back. You don't have to worry about nothing and nobody. I'll always take care of you. It's you and me against the world. And that's how I live my life. I don't know about fear or feelings or emotions. I wasn't emotionally attached to anything or anybody. I tell people, as horrific as that sounds of coming from all this abuse and physical abuse and verbal and sexual, I wasn't present for that experience. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous for consequences of my drinking. Consequences don't get my attention. I don't have a problem sleeping with Cousin It. I don't have a problem sleeping with strangers or waking up in a strange place or in alleys at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning or you calling me names. I don't have a problem with that when I'm not present for the experience. Alcohol allowed me to be detached and disconnected. What do you want to do to me next? That was my attitude. Who's next? You want to hit me? You want to punch me? You want to have sex with me? What's up? Let's do this. I had a smile on my face. I didn't cry. I ain't no punk. I was going in and out of therapy since I was a kid. My mother was always suicidal and we had to go to family therapy. I've seen enough two-way mirrors and ink blots. Those ink blots are ridiculous. Now, I only share this because I'm hoping somebody will explain this to me one day of why you're going through stuff psychologically, I guess, in trauma, and they show you these ink blots that all look like butterflies. And I'm trying to figure out what that's about. I just want somebody to explain that to me. I still don't get that. Are you going through, what is this, a butterfly? What are we talking about? What's happening here? This is supposed to help me. I don't get what's going on. No teacher, no social worker. I'm sure there were people who cared about me, who wanted to help. I remember I had a brutal rape when I was in the sixth grade. And I went to my sixth grade teacher and I was concerned. I just think about these things. I'm so out of touch with reality. Alcohol allowed me to be so disconnected. I remember going to her like it was no big deal. I was like, excuse me, can I talk to you for a minute after class? And she said, sure. I said, by the way, I was like, my cousin raped me yesterday and I'm bleeding everywhere. I mean, not yesterday, the last week. I've been bleeding for a week and I don't know what to do. She's like, what? She took me to the doctor. That's all I remember. This was the life that I lived. I wasn't planning on changing that life. I never questioned it. I never said something's wrong with the way I'm living. I really thought everybody lived like this. If you meet friends of my past that I grew up with, they would tell you that they would have never known anything was wrong with Teresa. I talked to them today. I would smile, I would laugh, I would connect with you. I didn't go around saying that this was horrible. This is it. And I went to Catholic school for 11 and a half years. I said the Our Father, the Hail Mary, I sang in the choir, I put on my uniform. What? This is what you do. This is a lifestyle. I didn't have peer pressure. I don't have to drink in the streets. I drink in my house. I don't share my booze. I'm not into like everybody party. No, this is mine. Okay? No everybody, nothing. This is mine. You get yours. Because this can't run out. I always describe it this way. I'm a cigarette smoker, okay? I smoke a pack of cigarettes a day. There are 20 cigarettes in a pack. If I give you one, that leaves me 19. That's an issue. You understand? Right? We got a problem. I'm down one. I'm short. It's very confusing. No. I can't give you one. It throws me off. That describes my drinking. The truth of the matter is, from what I understand, even though my perception is warped, I didn't know that I was suffering from a spiritual malady. I didn't know I had an allergy of the body or the obsession of the mind. I didn't have that language. The way I understood it, there was nothing wrong with the way I was living. Even though perhaps doctors, social workers, teachers thought there was, I didn't. And I wasn't going to change it. And if you got in the way between me and my booze, you needed to go. Because this is the only thing that's going to take care of me. This is the only thing that's going to love me. You're not. It never crossed my mind to leave alcohol, that alcohol would leave me, ever. I was going to die like everybody else in my family. The way you die in my family is with cirrhosis of the liver, kidney failure, you fall down, you crack your skull, you get shot, you OD, your legs get amputated because you're a diabetic and you keep drinking. Even more reason to drink with no legs. Could you imagine? I never understood when the doctors be like, you need to stop. I'm like, he ain't got no legs. You're going to ask him to stop drinking, he don't got no legs. Don't make no sense. You know, it's kind of trippy. I talk about what it was like. You know, my family's still like that. When I go visit my family, I always say, I go to Puerto Rico, and when I show up, I buy my cousins a six-pack, I let them smoke a joint, and we get on the road. They can't drive no other way. I'm not going to ask them not to drink and drive. We'll have an accident. I can't tell them to do that. They've never driven sober. Do you know what I'm saying? I was speaking at a conference in Puerto Rico. It was such an honor. I got to do it in Spanish for the first time. You know, it's my first language. That was beautiful to tell my story. Oh, we were crying. It was a mess. We're very passionate peoples. Could you imagine the story in Spanish? You ever seen the Spanish soap operas? It was deep. Everybody was like, oh my God. Oh, it was intense. But I brought a friend of mine from my home group. And he got to meet my family. He was like, she's serious. He was scared. He met my family. He was scared. He was like, I don't want to go up there. I don't want to go up there. I'm like, you're fine, man. Everybody got guns. It's all cool. They're not going to shoot you. Relax. We got you. I got you. You with me. You with me. Anyway, it's scary. As I said, I wasn't planning on changing that relationship in the way that I lived. And there's a lot of horrific things that I went through. I ran off with strangers. I could have got killed many times. I've OD'd, I've been in and out of hospitals, that the people in the hospital were tired of seeing me. They would always say, oh, her again, put her in the corner. I was always malnourished. I didn't learn about the four food groups until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't eat food. And I was planning on dying like everybody else. In my family, when a baby's born, we cry, and when you die, we celebrate. So what ended up happening to me? You know, I still trip out on how I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't planning on coming here. That was not the plan. I wasn't like, oh, you know, I think I drank a lot. I ran my car into a tree. I woke up with a stranger. Perhaps I need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I crack up when people tell me that, yeah, I was drinking a lot. I came to AA. I'd be like, really? That's deep. Right? That's very impressive. You just came like that? You sure you're an alcoholic? Because we don't really do things like that. That's not normal. You know what I'm saying? For an alcoholic, that's usually a normal person thinks like that. But whatever, I'll keep coming back. I hear you. It's all good. What I say is what ended up happening to me is what the way you explained it to me is that alcohol stopped working. One day at the age of 24, alcohol betrayed me. And it turned its back on me. And it left me emotionally retarded with no coping skills in a world that was not familiar. And so, you see, to me it's different to now all of a sudden be present for my experience. I think that's different. When I now notice that I'm sleeping with strangers, that's different. When I walk into a bar and I hear them say, look what the trash brought in. How long they been saying that? I never heard that. But now all of a sudden I hear it and it goes into the pit of my stomach and my stomach does something funny and I can't shake that off. That's scary to me. I see the look of disgust in my grandmother's face, and I can't get rid of that look. And then I noticed that Daddy stopped talking to me. When did Daddy stop talking to me? I had always burned bridges. Now all of a sudden I want to know where everybody's going. Why you ain't talking to me? Why all of a sudden everything became so important? I just remember that all of a sudden I became present for my experience, and it scared the living daylights out of me. I don't know how to do be present. Now I can't take a bath because the water hurts my skin. And I drink because I have to. I drink for oxygen. It's not fun. I've never been a social drinker. I drink to breathe. I didn't know that I shook when I didn't drink. I never noticed that. I always had booze. I don't know anything about running out. And all of a sudden I'm counting how many. It was a very strange time in my life. You can look back on all of the 24 years and say that my life was horrible. A lot of people say, you got to write a book. I've seen a lot of scary movies. I go see, was that movie Precious? I don't know. There's a lot of movies out. People see that movie Precious. I'm like, that's not scary. You want to hear scary? That's not scary. All of a sudden, I'm drinking and I'm still present. And I'm drinking and I'm still present. And I'm noticing that I'm present. This is the best way I describe it, and I never want to forget it. All I know is that I'm sitting at my favorite bar. I'm a VIP. You call it barfly. It's all about perspective, okay? However way you want to break it down for yourself, you call it that. I call it VIP, okay? I'm the VIP at that bar. And a VIP is a person that they can close the bar and you don't have to leave because you're going to be right back. Okay? So what they do is they close and they leave you there and then they open up and you're still there. There's a lot of VIPs in here. Okay? And the same thing like the old timers, I had my favorite seat in that bar that nobody sat down in. How about? And all I know is that I was sitting in my bar, my seat, and I took a drink, and I looked at you, and you were still ugly. And that kind of tripped me out a little bit. Okay? And I turned around, and I took another drink. You know what I'm saying? Because I was wondering what was going on there. And I turned back around, and you were still ugly. And now that started freaking me out. Because you should have transformed by now, because that's usually how that goes. You understand? And that scared me. And then I took another drink, and not only were you still ugly, I still went home with you. And that's when I knew we had a problem. Yo, that's a problem. You know what I mean? That's a problem. And that's scary. Now I couldn't change my condition. I couldn't change my situation. I don't know how to live any other way. This is the only thing that I know. What am I to do? My best friend, my lover, my companion just betrayed me. It stopped working for me. What am I supposed to do? I am emotionally retarded. I got no coping skills. Where is a drunk like me supposed to go? What am I supposed to do? I got no point of reference. The only thing left for me was to call death into my life. And to me, it's a cold thing when you invite death into your life and death don't take you out. What's up with that? I ended up on a cold day in Queens, New York, with the snow up to my knees, doing the aimless walk. I call it the walk with no purpose, no agenda, no destination. It's just a walk. And I ended up in a church. Wasn't looking for the church. And it's not a straight line walk either. I still trip out on that. I go to New York and I do that walk. It's not a straight line. It's a lot of ins and outs to get there. And I ended up in a church and I walked in that church and I felt a presence. Was it a moment of clarity? Was I completely tired? Was I really sick and tired of being sick and tired of being sick and tired? Was I done? I don't know. All I know is that I walked into that church and I felt the presence. I know I was tired. And I said a prayer. You see, it's a prayer that's different than any other prayer. It felt like it came from the depths of my soul. And I said, God, please allow me to feel the peace that I feel in this church inside of me. And I didn't want it for a year. I didn't want it for a month. I just want it for a moment. I just wanted 1 second for my head to shut up, for my insides to stop turning, and for my skin to stop crawling. Just for a moment, so I can get a grip. I had no idea that that prayer was going to change my life. None. I'm still tripping out. I'm still tripping out. From that prayer, I got picked up and bought 3,000 miles from New York City to California. And I've been tripping ever since I got here, like Disneyland. Like I got abducted. That's how I be feeling, like the UFO people abducted me and I'm on some other planet. I went to my father's house. I asked him for help. I'm so surprised that I did that. I never asked for help in my life. My father said that I was standing in the middle of a crossroad. There was 3 directions I was headed. I was so close to him, I could taste him, I could smell him. That was jails, mental institutions, and death. There was another road. It was recovery. He told me I can give it a try. If it didn't work out, the other 3 were waiting for me. I got on a Greyhound bus, and that's where I detoxed all the way to California from New York. I threw up. I shook. I sweated. I hallucinated. I had my last drink in El Paso, Texas. There was a man on that bus that I believe helped save my life. I was sick. I hadn't been without a drink in this body since fetus. I was sick. And that man said, I know what you need. And he was right. I was sick. More people die from alcohol detox than anything else. I could have died on that bus. And he got me this drink and he held it to my mouth and I drank it like a dog that had been out of water. And allow me to go the rest of the way. You ever heard that joke? You take an alcoholic brain when they die and put it in a jar of alcohol, you're going to hear, ah. You ever heard that? I should leave that in my will, right? I'm going to put that in the will, make everybody do it. Put it in there and I want you to listen. I arrived in downtown Los Angeles on May 29th, 1990. For the last 23 years, but for the grace of God, That's my sobriety date. If you be new, there are some first-timers around here. This is my first time in the program. I like seeing newcomers outside in conferences. They're so cute. They're like, this is my first time. I'd be like, mine too. They'd be like, really? How long you been here? I'd be like, 23 years. They'd be like, what? This is my first time. My mother picked me up. I was wearing a size 1 pair of pants with 2 pants underneath. I had a huge sweatshirt, 4 months pregnant, with a dead baby in my belly. Didn't have a heartbeat by the time I got there. I've lost 4 children. And my mother dropped me off in the rooms. And she turned me over to the very people who had saved her life. I always say I feel like a baby in a baby basket left at the doorsteps of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was the old timers who picked up that basket and spoon-fed me and nursed me and loved me. I needed to learn a whole new way of life when I got here. Talk about getting rid of old ideas. My perception was completely warped. I definitely couldn't differentiate the true from the false. My reality was so distorted. I didn't know how to feel. I didn't know how to think. I didn't know how to live without alcohol. And you had to teach me how to live all over again. I've been on a journey the last 23 years. They gave me a sponsor. They told me to sit down and shut up and listen. And they just spoon-fed me. And they loved me in a way that was so different. We were talking about it during dinner. It was different. They had to teach me how to love myself. And I always say I learned the traditions long before I learned the steps. I love the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a member because I say I am. You can't throw me out. You don't understand. A girl like me, how important that is. It don't matter if I'm Latina, I'm Puerto Rican, I'm black, I'm short, I'm tall, money, no money. That's none of your business. The only thing that matters is that I have a desire. And I'm a member. And I have a seat. You should have seen me my first year. Ask him. I was like, I'm a member. You can't throw me out. I don't like you either. Okay? I don't like you. And it don't matter. Okay? I don't like you. You don't like me. It don't matter. We're members. Sit down. I used to go around telling people that. I don't like you. You don't like me. But you have to help me because I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll tell it. This is funny. I used to tell this story a lot, but it just gives you a good description. I went to a meeting and I thought it was KKK, all right? They looked like they were all white people, so I thought it was a KKK meeting. It was early in the morning. Actually, it's Unit A. It wasn't even K, whatever, in Burbank. And I sat in that meeting. It was 7 o'clock in the morning, and I was like, oh my God, it's a KKK meeting, but I'm not leaving because I'm a member, right? And and I raised my hand. I said, excuse me, I'll make an announcement. Okay, I'm a member. All right? And I don't care if you KKK, all right? And I'm not leaving, okay? Because everybody in here is going to help the Negro today, okay? It was so funny. I started going to that meeting a lot, right? In the Valley, it was just, they were like, we're not KKK. I'm like, I'm just saying. I don't, as long as I don't see no rope going around no tree, I'm not going nowhere. I was a mess when I was new. Anyway. You told me to apply the same energy that I drank to this program, and I applied a lot of energy to my drinking. You told me this was a life and death errand. I came to you like I had 20 bullet holes in me. I'm bleeding all over the place. I'm not interested in your credentials. I just need to know if you have a needle and a thread. This is the last house on the block. I came here to save my life. And if you can't help me, somebody needs to blow my brains out, because I can't do another 24 hours like this. How are we going to live one day at a time like this? You need to give me a new set of tools, a tools to learn how to live life. I'm so grateful for good sponsorship and a home group. So grateful. We weren't looking to be buddies. They weren't worrying about hurting my feelings. I have sponsors I've been sponsoring, like, most of their sobriety for a long time. They're so cute. They'll tell other people, she thinks we're not friends, but we're friends, right? I tell sponsors, I've been sponsored like 19 years. I'm like, I'm not your friend. You know that, right? They've been like, 19 years? Jeez. But it was important that I had somebody that was neutral, who didn't co-sign my nonsense. And all I needed to know about this woman was that she had a working knowledge of the steps in the book. Nothing else mattered. Personality did not matter. She was sober, and she had a relationship with a higher power. They used to say, some are sicker than most, some are sicker than others, and you are sicker than them all. That's what they used to tell me. Every time I would talk about how strange somebody was in the rooms, they would be like, when you got one finger pointing at one somebody, you got three pointing back at you. So I couldn't even talk about other people. After a while, I got so tired of looking about the negativity about myself, I started finding the good things in others. I'm like, you got nice eyes. I don't know, something. You have to have something nice because I'm sick of talking about myself negatively. They immediately put me into service and sweeping the floors and picking up the chairs and the foundation that I was given when I got here. It's the foundation that I've been living on the last 23 years. I love the simplicity of this program. I used to hear it's a simple program for complicated people. They used to say, keep it simple, stupid. Everybody's so sensitive today. Keep it simple, stupid. They used to call us stupid. I'm grateful they let me sit around and process and dialogue. The old timers used to tell me, what step have you gotten to? And if I say anything before 10, they're like, I can't talk to you. Sanity does not return until step 10. We're not having a conversation. This is an insane conversation. Until you get to 10, sanity has not returned yet. So we're not going to talk about anything other than what you should be doing in that step. I'm so grateful for the foundation. It saved my life. I've been through a lot in 23 years. I've had jobs. I've lost jobs. I tell you, I got sponsors today that stay sober just to see me get through the day. I ask them. They were like, I'm not drinking today because I'm going to see what she is going through. They come to my house. They pull up with an apple and a sandwich and sit back and watch like it's a movie. It's hysterical. I've been through some stuff. Ask Kim. I live with her. Been living with her the last 23 years. Let me tell you. Talk about willing to go to any lengths. I've had to learn how to feel here. I've had to learn how to live life on life terms. But the only way to do that is through the steps. I mean, thank God. I say good sponsorship. That my sponsor told me that those steps were not homework. They weren't an essay. That the program was outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That was the blueprints for life. And that they put that book together for a girl named Teresa that one day was going to come along and all I had to do was follow the black on the white and to do what thousands of men and women have done to recover from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. But that the only thing that I needed to do, that the very first thing, people talk about the first step. They told me that the very first step in recovery was that I conceded to my innermost self that I was truly alcoholic. Because until then, I ain't doing no steps. That's the only way I'm gonna do the work. I need to stop lying to myself and say, the party is over, the jig is up, let's do this. And I have to learn how to apply the steps in my daily life. I've had to breathe them, taste them, smell them, digest them. They had to become a working part of my mind and my body. I suffer from a soul sickness, a spiritual malady. You told me that then the only way that this is going to happen is in this way and in this order. The spiritual malady must be treated first. And then and only then will I straighten out mentally and physically. It is not the other way around. That I must find a power greater than myself. That's not an option. I am so grateful nobody ever apologized for their relationship to God when I got here. I'm so grateful. They told me you must find a power greater than yourself. The only thing you need to know is that you ain't it. That's all you need to know. That there is one. And where do I find this power? You gave me a hint. If you be new, it ain't that deep. They say deep down inside, every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. There's one place I need to go that I never thought of going, and that was inside of me. You told me it was an inside job. And then I needed a clean house. The old timer used to tell me, Teresa, you got this beautiful light inside of you. It's so beautiful. But we got to get rid of the garbage so that you can shine. God don't make no junk. You deserve to be here. I had to learn that I was a child of God. And that so are you. And that I get to live this thing one day at a time. I put one hand in God and one hand in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I trust in that. I can no longer rely on booze. It's not doing it for me no more. So what else I got? I know I got another drink in me. I'm an alcoholic. Drinking will always be an option for a drunk like me. I got tons of excuses why I should be drinking. I can't even go through all the things that's happened in 23 years, but I'll tell you, recently, my mother has Alzheimer's. My brother just passed away from doing a bone marrow transplant. It was the hardest thing I ever had to do. It's my only brother. To put him on life support and take him off. That was horrible. But I did it, and I stayed sober because what you told me to do. And I had to ask God to remove the selfishness and the self-seeking and the dishonesty and the fear so that I can do what He will have me do rather than what Teresa wants to do. You taught me that. How uncomfortable and how painful. And it's a new experience. And I turn to you and I ask you, how do you get through that? I've heard many people share about death in these rooms, and they stayed sober, so I can too. But it hurts. I have many excuses to drink. The miracle is that despite every reason, every excuse, I don't. That's the miracle. Why don't I drink? Because I have tapped into a source of power that is doing for me what I cannot do for myself. I am a witness of that. Trips me out. I take no credit for it. I can't pat myself on the back. I don't go, good job, Teresa. The only thing you asked me to do was to have an open mind, honesty, and a mustard seed of willingness. And I sit back and I become a witness to this power. That this program works, despite Teresa. Many people go, oh my God, Teresa, I'm so grateful what you did for me. How kind and how generous you have been. I go, you need to thank God because I had different plans. I wanted to punch you in the face. So I just tripped out on what I saw. I had a whole other plan and something else came out of my mouth. It's amazing. My father has Parkinson's. You know, it's just amazing how this program works. Right before coming here, packing my bags, like these are what my days look like. And I'm just in awe of this power and this program and what it's done to me. I always say something has happened to me. You know, this self-centered, self-seeking, selfish girl has become so other-centered and present in the moment. An acceptance of the moment, even though it's uncomfortable, but being in the present, in the now. And as I was packing, I hadn't even finished packing to come here, my stepmother calls me and she says, your father, I just moved him to hospice. What did she say to me? I just moved him to hospice. And the doctor says that he's not going to make it. And they're asking me not to do a DOR, not to resuscitate. I can't make that decision. What do you want to do? And he's not going to make it through the night. I'm like, what? And I have to pause. I just came from burying my brother, right? All I know is I'm on my way to Minnesota to speak at a conference and, okay, we're doing what now? All right, I would like us to do as much as we can for him, but if they say that we can, then we can't. What would you like me to do? God, what would you like me to do? Would you like me to call Connie and tell her I'm now on my way to Phoenix, or do I go to Minnesota? And I come to Minnesota because I'm sober. And I have to tell the new person that we got to stay sober no matter what. I don't know how to do anything else. I don't know how to do anything else. Shit. And I tell my stepmother, just call me and let me know. And we take it one moment at a time, one day at a time. I don't know. And I got here and I got on the plane. It's okay. And we talking, you know, before I took off in the plane and when I landed. And he's in ICU, you know, right now. And they're getting him breathing. And I don't know. I might get a call. I don't know. The phone could be ringing right now. I don't know. This is insane. But I'm sober, and I'm not thinking about drinking, and I'm thinking about you and how I could be. You told me, when all else fails, you work with another alcoholic. The only thing that ensures permanent sobriety is working with an alcoholic, and that's what I do. And if I got to get on a plane and show up in Phoenix and be of service, I'll do that too. I love my father dearly. I don't want my father to go. I don't want him to go. I don't, but I'm not running anything. God is in charge. And so, what does Teresa do? I put one hand in God and one hand in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't do this alone. And I tell you I'm uncomfortable. I get to cry around you. See, sobriety has given me so much more than putting the plug on the jug. I'm not this type of drunk that got sober and say, life is so wonderful. Keep coming back. It's going to be great. I'm like, no, it's not. No, it ain't. It ain't great. It's not fun all the time. I'm not going to tell you that. That's not true. Life's in session. And it's serious out there. And it's going to go with you or without you. But we got some tools. And I stopped telling God. You know, what was that saying? Stop telling God how big your storm is and start telling your storm how big your God is. And that's how I get to live today. And I don't have to do this pretty. I came here to save my ass, not my face. And it's been a journey. It's been nice to be back in Minnesota. I came here last weekend. The school that my brother went through, I end with this. I'm just so much into my brother. I brought my friend to Mall of America. I thought that would be a nice trip, right? First time in Minnesota, I take her and I'm like, look, we're in Mall of America. I start breaking down crying. I'm like, I used to come here with my brother. She was like, okay. I was like, I know this is a happy place and I'm sad, but it's going to be all right. But I came here last weekend. You know, this is bittersweet. When you asked me to come and speak, I told my brother, and it would have been the first time that my brother would have heard me speak. And so he was going to come, you know, anyway, he's in spirit, but it's different when it's physical. I get it. I just want a little, no, please don't give me your opinion afterwards. I can't take it. I can't. I don't mind experience, but opinions are like assholes. Everybody got one. It drives me crazy. It drives me crazy. I let people come up to me. He's in a better place. Did I tell you I was worried about where he was at? I don't remember saying that. It's me I'm concerned about. I know he's all right. But what I was saying that I thought was beautiful is my brother was here for 5 years studying really, really hard at the seminary and to be a pastor. And he died just a few months shy of his birthday and the graduation. And what an honor it was that they had myself and my nephews fly out and they graduated my brother. They gave him the degree to my nephews. That was awesome. And I got so much help. So that's the place I'm in right now. That's what's going on with me right now. I'm really experiencing for the first time what it is to grieve such a deep loss. No, I mean, it's very different. It's a sibling, my only brother. And now maybe my dad. No, and in a way, my nephews. I helped raise them. And their mom just showed up and said, I want them now, you know. And I have to ask God. I can't play God. No, that's what you taught me. And I need to trust in this process. Do I want to go over there? They call me to come get them and run things. You taught me I can't. And I have to tell them it's going to be all right. But man, it hurts. They're 10 and 15. That's a long time that I've been in their life. But I have to respect their mom. And ask God what he would have me do and what he would have me be. So I'm going through it right now. but I know this too shall pass. Don't tell me that one too, because I've been wanting to punch people in the face when I say it. Because you see, the thing about that, it's very hopeful, but it hasn't passed yet. Do you know what I mean? But it's all right. Anyway, I've gone on long enough. I'm looking forward to the weekend. I'm grateful that I had a chance to come back here. There's so much love. The fellowship in Minnesota is just awesome. And I've enjoyed it for many, many years coming back here. And Bob Darrell's sponsee, where he's at, Mike, came out with his sponsees to help me move stuff. Thank you so much, my brother Sting. You guys have been so great. So I'm looking forward to the weekend. Kim is going to need a lot more hugs. If you can stand up and say hi, because she's been having to live with me lately, and it hasn't been really good. And she's staying sober, so that's a miracle, too, through this experience. So she needs a lot of support. So I would love to hear more of your experience with what it is to stay sober and live through this grief of pain. It's very interesting. I want to thank you all so much for loving me and allowing me to tap into this source of power. Thank you for allowing the God in you to help discover this God within me, because I'm such a lady. I've turned into this beautiful lady. And again... God gets all that credit, but I want to say quickly to the newcomer, I don't tell you if I can do it, you can do it. I think that's quite arrogant. What I tell you is that if this power can take a girl like me who was worthless and nothing and lived a life that could be far worse than yours, and if this power can take a girl like me and pick me up and dust me off and build me up so you can see what he can do. That's why I say God's a show off. Could you imagine what he can do for you? So as I say, I know I got another drink in me. But for every fiber of my being tells me that if I take another drink, I don't have another recovery. For me to drink is to die. So I'm just going to keep coming back. Stay in the middle of unity, recovery, and service. Extend my hand to you, because of the theme of this weekend is I am responsible. You extended your hand to me, and you loved me till I can love myself. There is no way that I'm not going to be responsible to continue to do that for you. I want to thank you. If nobody told you they love you today, I really, really do. I want to thank you so much for the honor and the privilege of being here this weekend and having this experience despite me. Connie, I've been a mess. She's been very patient with me, you know? She has. I want to thank you all so much for being here. You have a wonderful weekend ahead of you, some great speakers, and if you didn't like what I had to say, no problem. There are a bunch of other speakers later. Just keep coming back. And again, thank you so much for allowing me to